What are the big issues facing the PSC now?
Well, you know, the PSC, as you probably know, regulates in three primary areas: energy, telecom, and water. And each one of those areas, I think we have some primary drivers in the short term and medium term. In water, I think the issue is going to be water conservation. The Great Lakes Compact has just been ratified in this state. And water conservation, although not sort of a primary interest of the PSC in the past, has become so in the last year or two. And I think what we're going to continue to do is look at ways the PSC can be an appropriate player in incenting water conservation and looking at things like inclining block rates as we go forward for rate structure, looking at ways that we can use our new water conservation czar, Jeff Ripp, to go out and educate the water utilities on what their proper role is in water conservation. All of that with a backdrop that water, not only should it be appropriately conserved, but also appropriately used. And it is, in many ways, a driver for the economic engine of parts of this state. And because we have such a great resource, I want to make sure that we also don't hinder the ability of the utilities to make that water available to large water users in a way that helps the economy of the relevant areas.
What is an inclining block rate?
An inclining block rate is a block rate where for each incremental unit of water beyond a certain amount, you pay more than you did in the prior block. And the concept there is that large water users will pay more for the tail end of their water use. It's a way to try and incent conservation. Right. And we've implemented an inclining block rate in Waukesha at their request, an area with a lot of water conservation issues for the residential block. And I would characterize that block rate as sort of an initial step, seeing how it works in Waukesha, and then, if appropriate, expanding that to other communities that are willing and able to look at it that way. Not every community is going to be the same. We need to have some flexibility as we go forward on it.
In the past, has there been a declining block rate that the more you use
the less? The declining block rate had historically been sort of the measure that Wisconsin used, and often now we have essentially a single block rate. Mm-hmm. But it's a rate structure that's been used out west where they have a much more arid environment and serious water issues, and I think it's something we need to look at. And that's only one piece of this as well. I think part of it for us has to be education, perhaps also looking at appropriate ways to incent utilities to actually spend some money on water conservation. So is there a way to do an infrastructure buyout program where the utility actually spends some money to help people put in some water conservation resources in their homes and businesses?
I heard an interview with Bill Richardson earlier this year when he was still running for president, and a lot of things that he said were pretty good, but he's the governor of New Mexico, and so he had talked about getting water from the Great Lakes, and the red flags just went up.
And as they should, obviously the Great Lakes Compact is going to prevent a lot of that. You know, in the last week or so, there's been some news out of California about how local water authorities are actually prohibiting the building of residential areas, in part because they can't prove that they can meet their water requirements in the next decade or so. And obviously, we have a very different picture in the Midwest, particularly in Wisconsin, than Bill Richardson and Arnold Schwarzenegger are facing out in their respective states. And so that's a good place to be, frankly. Now, we have some pressure on the aquifer and on the lakes, and we're going to make sure that we protect them and protect the aquifers. But we need to make sure we can use that as a resource locally and regionally. And we want to prevent the kind of concern we have here of the Southwest poaching on the plentiful Midwestern resource.
And first you were talking about water and then power and telecom.
Let me talk about telecom next, and then we'll jump into energy. Telecom, as you might know, the commission has opened up a generic proceeding, a docket, which we refer to as the 1777 docket because of the number we've given to it. The 1777 docket is really a broad brush look at where this state stands vis-a-vis its own regulatory structure, as well as the structure under federal law for sort of current and perhaps appropriate next step authority on telecommunications regulatory regimes. Clearly, this country is in a mode where we have moved towards more deregulation of the telecommunication industry. And I think the state has supported that reasonably. But what we have now is something of a fractured set of obligations and requirements for telecommunications utilities. And what we want to do in this docket is kind of everybody at the table and look at where we should go, if anywhere, on perhaps future changes in the regulatory regime. So I think certainly things that are going to be looked at in that docket our reporting requirements? You know, do utilities adequately give us the information we need, or are they giving too much? Are we getting too much information or information that we're not using appropriately? Mm-hmm. What is the appropriate role for advanced infrastructure build out in the state? How do we get high-speed internet out to parts of the state where it currently doesn't exist? What is the competitive landscape? Do we really want to have, or do we have, an apples-to-apples ability for competitors to actually go out into the market of ideas, the market of concepts, and really compete with each other? And that's vis-a-vis landlines versus cell phones versus VoIP providers. So right now, I think one of the things we want to look at is how do they compare with each other in terms of the regulatory burden? And are there appropriate changes to be made? And I think overarching for all of that is ultimately the assurance that consumers have a consumer protection backdrop upon which to fall on. That is, they need to have, whether you're a cell phone user or a landline user or a VoIP user, the ability to recognize and have comfort in the fact that there will be some consumer protection provisions in place no matter which resource you're using. And they have different regimes now, and I want to make sure that no matter what, which way we go on this debate, that consumers have the ability to have a good backdrop of consumer protections supporting their use. I think that's going to be the big push in the next year or two, and I hope that we're going to have that docket done by the end of the year. Commissioner Meyer is leading that particular docket, and I think what we'll have when we wrap this up is a couple of ideas, hopefully consensus, although honestly it's a very difficult thing to get. In the area of telecommunications, but some consensus ideas that we can bring forward, some things we can do on our own. I think without statutory changes, some are going to require probably some input from the legislature and the governor.
And the last time that those regulations were updated was
a long time ago? It's been almost a decade, so it's time for a new look.
A lot has changed since
then. A lot has changed, and you know, for the most part, I think it's for the better. I mean, you know, there's great competition, at least in certain parts of the state. Prices have gone down, generally speaking, for some of these resources. So it's not been a bad change. We want to make sure we're doing it right as we go forward. On the energy issues, now I would say that probably has taken up in the last few years and will continue to take up the lion's share of the commission and commission staff time. There are a number of topics that are important. I think certainly the topic that is going to be driving a lot of how the commission thinks about issues and what we do and what the state does is global warming. Global warming really is a theme that winds its way through all of the energy topics that the commission is taking up. As you know, the governor has instituted the Global Warming Task Force. That's going to have its recommendations done probably in the next 4 to 6 weeks, I would say, at the outside, by the middle of July, certainly at the very latest. And embedded within that, what I think will be a report of recommendations are going to be a lot of things that are going to fall within the commission's jurisdiction. Some of those have already happened. The task force made an interim report a few months ago, and the commission has already opened up 5 dockets looking at some of those topics, including things like rate reform, ways for the commission to incent both end users of energy as well as the utilities to promote energy conservation.
Excuse me.
So, the energy conservation piece from the ratepayer side is to make sure that ratepayers have incentives to use less energy. From the supplier side is to make sure that we're not hindering the utility's ability to actually incent energy efficiency as well. So moving away, at least in some situations, from what has been the historical model of utility profitability, which is to sell more energy.
Right.
So you need to figure out a way to, with a new regulatory paradigm, change that. We've opened up dockets on those two issues. We've opened up a docket on energy efficiency. How should the commission approach energy efficiency going forward? Very clearly, it's by consensus the cheapest way to address the concerns about global warming that are raised by generating electricity. If you can avoid building new infrastructure through at least partially the use of energy efficiency, you are in a much better place than building new resources. And so right now the commission is in a joint partnership with the utilities to run the Focus on Energy program. We spend anywhere from $65 to $70 million per year on that program. The recommendation coming out of the task force is to increase the amount being spent. The commission is looking at the process that it would take to go through that. That is to increase the amount being spent to make sure that we are planning and structuring energy efficiency programs through Focus on Energy with an eye towards increasing both the goals of energy efficiency, that is kilowatt hours saved and therm saved, but also making sure that as we potentially put more money into this program, that we have designed the program correctly to capture savings out there. Those are three of the dockets. The other two are wind on the lakes, the potential for using the Great Lakes as a wind resource. And then the last one is looking at carbon sequestration, the idea that you use coal to continue to generate power, but you capture the CO2 from the coal and ultimately inject it in a suitable geologic repository. The wind on the lakes issue, I'm very excited about. It's, you know, at least early analysis shows that we have a pretty good wind resource just off of the shores of Lake Michigan and Lake Superior. Clearly, wind on the water has been done elsewhere in the world. It's being done in Europe right now. I think ultimately the physics and the engineering will show that it can be done on Lake Michigan and Lake Superior. I think the thornier issue is the one that has arisen in other locations, both terrestrial and sea-based, that is the issue of aesthetics, the issue of impacts on fisheries and boating, and I think most critically the economics of it. Does it make economic sense? Because generally speaking, at least right now, it costs more money to build a turbine on Lake Michigan than it would, for example, on the land. And so ultimately, economics has to be an important piece to this. And at least current economics, based upon early analysis, shows that, and as the utilities have shown here in Wisconsin, that the best wind resource and the most affordable wind resource is in Iowa and Minnesota. And so that's why we're bringing in a fair amount of wind from those states. Those are the five dockets that are opened up, and I'm fairly confident that when the Global Warming Task Force makes its final recommendations, that there's going to be more stuff for the commission to deal with here. The renewable portfolio standard is an important piece of that, and it's one that we already have in the state at 10% RPS by the year 2015. The utilities are pushing hard to get to that, and I'm confident that they will be able to meet that goal. There are certainly some economic concerns that we have to think about as we go forward in terms of approving new infrastructure investments. We're at a time of rate pressure where rates have been going up, and that's difficult to deal with. Some of those things are outside of our control, generally, things like fuel costs for the utilities. But as we create mandates and new requirements for the utilities, as we should, to meet global warming goals, we have to be cognizant of the fact that new infrastructure investments are going to have an impact on the ratepayers. And so we've already approved some baseload generation in the last 5 years. We've approved transmission. And as we look towards approving new renewable resource build out, all those three things add together. And so we need to be concerned about what that means for both residential and commercial ratepayers, but also for industrial ratepayers. The state is, as is the country, having some economic difficulties right now. And to the extent energy costs are having a large impact on that or might have a large impact, we have to be careful as to how we approve those projects and how we spread that risk.
Bill Harvey spoke recently, I think, at the Alliant Energy Annual Meeting, and he talked about a new requirement by, I think, Iowa, and RPS was something like 20% by 2020, so they had jumped it up even more.
Yeah, I believe, I'm not familiar with his speech, I suspect he may have been talking about the Iowa decision to tentatively approve a project that Alliant had in Iowa. And undoubtedly, the country seems to be going towards a higher RPS. I know there's been talk of a 10% national RPS that hasn't gotten off the ground, but certainly Minnesota has a high RPS, an even higher one, specifically for Xcel Energy, one of its larger utilities. My sense is that we're going to go towards a higher RPS in this country and in this state, certainly something above 10% ultimately. I think it's something we have to do. I mean, we need to look really at all the options available to tackling global warming, and certainly the RPS plays a role in that. So does energy efficiency. So does appropriate transmission investment to ensure we can have easier access to cheaper resources. So does appropriate baseload generation decision making. Really, it's sort of an every hand on deck approach. We need to keep everything on the table so we figure out the best, most affordable way to do this. It's beyond doubt, I think, that the country's going to go to a cap and trade system at some point in the near future. There was a stalled debate on that in the United States Senate last week, but that aside, I think that any one of the two primary presidential candidates has endorsed cap and trade, and it's my sense that shortly after the new president takes office, we're going to have another push on this, and we'll see something in place in the next few years. And the commission needs to be thinking about that as it makes its decisions now, because the decisions that we make here, particularly on infrastructure, are ones that last not 5 years or 10 years, but at least 25, 30, and sometimes we have projects that have been running for 100 years, close to it. And so we need to be very careful as we build these large infrastructure projects that we're doing the best that we can to ensure that we're making a reasonable prediction of where the future is going to be. And that's not always easy, but it's something that we have to do every time.
Do you think we've lost ground in the last 8 years with the Bush administration?
I don't want to say we've lost ground, because I think we have made some very good progress in this state. We have built the things we needed to build. 10 years ago, we were in a situation where the state was facing brownouts and potential blackouts, and so we've built the infrastructure we need to build. I think the greater opportunities for us now lie not only in sort of what does the state do, but how do we fit into a regional and national plan of action, because I think that's really where the future is going. We are now part of a regional energy model with MISO, the Midwest Independent Transmission System Operator. So we are part of a regional model. I think we clearly will be part of a regional and national model for global warming. So I don't want to say that ground has been lost. I think we have taken some steps within our own authority, and I think we're going to see some change in the federal government's approach to this topic in the near future.
In terms of this summer, how is Wisconsin set for
energy? We're in a good place. We're in a good place, and again, I think that's because of the investments we've made in the past. And we also have the ability to rely upon the regional transmission grid if things get really tight. But I take great comfort in the fact that this commission has approved needed infrastructure investment that will take us through the hot days in July and August. So I think global warming is probably going to be the topic that really drives where we're going here on out. Again, we need to be careful with rate pressure and how we ensure we don't hurt the ratepayers of the state.
Do you think that nuclear energy is going to be part of the mix?
I think nuclear energy is part of the mix already. Right. As we are a state that gets anywhere from 15% to 20% of its energy from the three operating units on Lake Michigan, depending upon the year and when they have outages. So we will continue to be a nuclear state into the foreseeable future. The Florida Power and Light Plant has already had an extension of its NRC licenses, and Kewaunee is applying for the same. So those units will be up and operating through about 2030, 2033. Nuclear is a topic of great debate nationally, and as it should be, because it is really, with the exception of large hydro, the only baseload generation resource that is largely CO2 free. And that really has started to change the dynamic of how nuclear is being looked at. There are some problems that persist with nuclear that need to be addressed regardless of where the state of the country goes on the topic. Certainly first and foremost needs to be what we're going to do with the waste. We have continued to advocate for the opening of Yucca Mountain, which is very, very late in terms of its original time frame. I continue to think that's an option we need to pursue, but given indications in the United States Senate, it seems unlikely that that's going to happen anytime soon. But what you do with the waste is an important issue. Second is the economics of nuclear, because they are very expensive to build. When they break, they're expensive to fix. And so we need to make sure that nuclear is looked at closely for its economic viability. Right now in Wisconsin, there's essentially a prohibition in siting new nuclear because the statutes preclude the PSC from granting that authority until a nuclear repository is up and running and receiving nuclear waste. I think you're going to see, and we have seen some discussion at the governor's task force about nuclear, certainly some very heated discussion, I think, and some disparate views on the topic. I think we're going to continue to see that discussion. Where it's going to go, I don't know. I'm as curious as you are as to how the task force ends up on that particular piece. My sense is there are ways to approach nuclear, not under its current construct with the prohibition, but ways to look at sort of the whole plate of options and maybe reexamine it. But I think that's going to turn on a lot of things that need to be resolved first. And as I said, that economics and waste storage are two of the key things.
The Castbell plant, the Lion or WP&L, is its application is up for review. Do you have a sense of how that will go?
I can't talk about the Cassville case. It's a contested case in front of us, so I'm sorry. It's just not one that I can touch on.
There's another plant in Cassville, and that was just announced that it's going to switch to burning wood chips or something. Is that a step in the right direction?
Well, biomass has to be an important component of how the state is going. You're referring to a 50-megawatt project that's being sold to a merchant operator from the unregulated part of pub service. They're non-utility operations. And all I know is probably the same thing you've seen in terms of the public announcements, that it's going to be converted from a coal plant to a 50-megawatt biomass unit. That's a great, if that's all it is, that's a great project. Because, as we've talked about a moment ago, while the wind in this state is not as good as it is, at least terrestrially, in Iowa and Minnesota, we have an extraordinary biomass resource. And the forests of Wisconsin have historically played an important role in the economy of the state and will continue to do so. And one way for them to continue to be a viable economic resource is perhaps through biomass as a fuel for large-scale utility projects. We need to be very careful as we explore biomass to make sure that we don't have inappropriate competing interest in the resource. And the primary example and the concern I have is to make sure the paper industry is not necessarily or unnecessarily harmed by utility competition for the wood resource. I think we can get to a place where that doesn't happen, but I was encouraged to see that the conversion was going to occur at that small plant. I hope to see larger plants try and do the same, because it is really the one of the best homegrown resources we have in Wisconsin.
And the WPL plant in Cassville, how big is that?
The one they are proposing is 300 megawatts.
Okay. So it's just one-sixth or so?
The one that's being sold is about one-sixth of the capacity.
Is the Oak Creek plant, in terms of it's moving along, but there are challenges, court challenges to it still?
Well, there are, as you know, issues with the water intake pipe. And, you know, this commission supported that plant. I will continue to support that plant. I think it was the right decision to approve them. And I believe, you know, the process will bear that out in the long run. But we are planning to have those units up and operating, and I look forward to having the co-owners get them going soon.
Are there any other challenges facing the PSC that you see?
I think, you know, certainly a continuing challenge that the commission is going to have is to make sure we have the appropriate set of skilled workers in this industry. It's something that we've seen, at least for the last two or three years, as the baby boomers start to retire. Can we attract people to the industry? And Commissioner Meyer has worked through some of that, and I intend to work through some of that myself as well, to make sure we get to the right spot with having a trained, skilled pool of workers to help the utilities out. An additional topic, I think, is energy planning. You know, as we've talked about, global warming is a big issue, and as the commission makes these decisions, we need to make sure that we are using an appropriately broad point of view on what is the right project to build. Does it make sense now and in the future? And that's a difficult question, because sometimes you're taking into account the competing needs of various players. You're taking into account a future that may be different even 10 years from now than you could even contemplate. You know, one of the things we've talked about but don't know where it's going is the issue of plug-in hybrids. And if all of the cars or a large portion of the cars in the state in the next decade change to plug-in hybrid, what does that mean for the electricity needs of the state? Because that seems to be at odds at some level with sort of the assumption that we need to continue to ramp down on energy savings, or to ramp up energy savings and ramp down on energy use. But it's very possible that if society goes towards a large plug-in hybrid model, we may need some more resources. And so trying to get those answers right now for the future, I think means we have to continue to look at our energy through planning tools that we have to make sure we're getting it right here.
Do you think in coming decades that the new energy plants would be coal?
You know, we are a coal state. Like I said, we were a nuclear state. We're about 60% coal. I think it's a mistake to to say no coal ever. You know, it's, I think that's short-sighted. We need to understand, you know, where we are now and where we need to go. It's a very plentiful resource in this country. I think carbon sequestration, as we talked about a while ago, has some potential. I think we're not where we need to be with that commercially. I'd love to see the federal government step up and really throw a lot of money at carbon sequestration, because that needs to be a part of the answer going forward. The reality is we're probably not a decade away from commercial scale operation of carbon sequestration. Probably it's more like 20 years. And so what do you do during the interim period? So there's some difficult questions with coal, but I think it's a mistake to say never.
Wasn't there a big project down in Illinois that the Department of Energy just canceled?
It was canceled. I'm trying to think of the name, FutureGen.
Was that disappointing?
It was disappointing. You know, and the Department of Energy has indicated they are going to continue to fund FutureGen, but in a different model. The model they had was sort of one large project, and there was some regional competition for where that would be. And DOE was going to fund a large portion of it. Their model going forward is to essentially fund smaller pieces of a myriad of projects. But it was disappointing for us because it appears, at least initially, that Wisconsin's geology is not particularly well suited for carbon sequestration, whereas Illinois might well be. And so that seems to be a likely place for Wisconsin to turn to for sequestration of CO2 related to power production used in Wisconsin. Now, there's a lot of models to get to that. One is to build plants in Wisconsin and pipe the CO2 to Illinois. An alternative model is to build the plants in Illinois, pipe it in there, and then ship the electrons up the line to Wisconsin. There's different ways to approach it, but either way, Illinois seems to be a much better location for it than Wisconsin. So it was disappointing, but that doesn't mean we're going to stop looking at that topic here.
On a personal level, you've been the PSC chair now for
2 weeks. Uh-huh. 2 weeks.
How does it feel?
It feels great. You know, I was the executive assistant to the chairperson for 2 years prior to taking this job, so I feel I have some good grounding, and I have learned from a very good chair, Dan Ebert, who preceded me, and so hopefully I will do all the good things he did and continue to carry the mantle in a way that suits the state.
Was he the executive assistant before?
He was. He was the executive assistant to chairperson Bernie Bridge.
In terms of your career path, where were you before here?
Before I came to the PSC a little over 2 years ago, I was at the Department of Regulation and Licensing. I was a division administrator running a group of prosecutors and lawyers who prosecuted license holders for violations of their professional licenses. I was there for about 18 months. Prior to that, I was in Governor Doyle's office as one of the assistant legal counsels for about 18 months. For about 5 years before that, I was at the Department of Justice as a litigator in both the environmental protection and civil litigation units. And then prior jobs included being a public defender back east, and I also worked at the EPA for about 2 years.
Are you from Wisconsin?
From Philadelphia area originally, though. I've been here for a decade, so I consider myself a transplant, a happy transplant at this point.
I think that runs through my questions. Is there anything else that...
That covers it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.